trucks, all those. And it can be, any of those could be operating those vehicles.
So on that particular piece of business, how many bids would you get on that piece, do you suppose? How many companies would bid that particular part?
Well, that's where we now have the
562,000
is the coverage for the general liability and the auto liability combined. It's one policy. It actually has general liability.
Commercial
general, automobile liability, public officials' errors and omissions, and employment practices liability are all in that same policy for the $562,000. There really isn't a breakdown between.
Is that carried by one company?
That is with Chartis, yes. And then above that we have the $130 million of coverage with six different insurance policies. And that's the premium that totals $327,000.
Does it kind of seem like it limits you to bidders on that much business in one pool, like your?
We've had them separate policies over the years. We've had them together. In this particular case, the broker has a policy that is all inclusive with all those coverages, and that's how they provided the bids when they came in.
So it's been designed over the years. How many companies do bid that particular piece, though? Do you remember?
Even when they came in separately, it's changed how the market changes. We've had it with two different carriers, and sometimes it's with one carrier.
Can we talk about how we solicited it, though? Did we list in the solicitation? Did we list here the different types of coverage? And some proposals came in with different insurance carriers for the three different parts,
right.
Or four different parts,
and
one came in with one for everything.
We just tell them we want general liability, we tell them we want business automobile liability, we tell them we're interested in this other coverage. They package it. The broker and the insurance carriers determine what the best package is.
John, can a proposal be for only a piece of that?
Yes, we've always put in the RFP that we keep the, if somebody comes in with a great primary coverage, but not a good excess coverage, and somebody else has excess, and we will split those coverages also.
So you still go a la carte?
Yes, we do.
With the option of pulling one,
yes,
of those. So
do.
They still have,
yes,
to give you their price on line items, not a lump sum.
Well, they actually, the last 5 years, everything changed after 9/11. So the last 10 years is pretty much one price. They won't split those out for us. And then we would have to, if we decided to split them, we have to go back to them and ask them for a clarification on their proposal.
That's kind of some of the insurance that I carry in my businesses. And every once in a while, every 3 years or so, somebody else wants to get on the bike. So they really come in aggressively with their pricing. And then about every 3 years, you get somebody else that wants to take on that industry, that business. And that's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
How you do that. That's the one that I'd be
the good thing about. In your industry is there's a lot of dealers out there. There's a lot of people who are in that type of coverage, and so there's a lot of competition. For example, for the tollway, when we go out for our property insurance and I say we have bridges, four underwriters leave the table almost immediately because there isn't a lot of market for that. Because there's not, I mean,
right.
In Chicago there's 250 different dealers that they can spread that risk over. In Illinois, there's just the tollway, so there isn't a lot of spread of risk for that particular coverage. So it becomes tough. Where, as somebody told me when I first came here, welcome to the amusement park as far as getting insurance.
Well, how about maybe the next meeting, Mike, maybe you could gather some more information. We could talk about it a little further. We can think about it.
Think about whether we have to do a formal RFI process or whether there can be some more informal, but, public, maybe conversation to get some additional feedback and report back to you.
Okay. Is that all right? Sure. Okay. All right. Thank you for the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. I guess, Mike, you're back up again. Discussion of the operating reserve levels.
Okay. Thank you. If you don't mind, I'll just do this from my seat.
Sure.
The board has previously requested that staff review the issue of operating reserves and provide you some input with respect to the level of reserves that the tollway should maintain for unanticipated operating expenses or potential potentially declines in revenue in order to meet our operating cash flow needs. We currently do have an operating reserve that was established pursuant to the trust indenture requirements. Under that, those requirements, that reserve can be as large as 30% of our operating budget, and our current operating budget is $267 million. It can be established at lesser amounts pursuant to resolution by the Board of Directors, and has been. Previously, it was established at $25 million. It was reduced in 1 year to provide additional funds for operating down to $17 million. And then just this past year, as a part of our budget process, the board approved an increase this year from $17 million up to $27.4 million. So it's currently at 20. By the end of the year, it'll be at $27.4 million, which is a little over 10% of our annual operating budget. We went and we reviewed literature from the Government Finances Officers Association and the National Association of State Budget Officers, and they recommend for general governments, and particularly general governments of a smaller size, not state, they recommended a reserve or a fund balance equal to about 2 months of operating expenses. So that would be about 16.7% of your annual budget. One of the things that the UFOA indicated is that the level of that reserve really should be evaluated in the context of several factors. One is the predictability of revenue and the volatility of our expenditures. And I think we have a slight advantage in that the tollway revenue is relatively predictable relative to what other governments and municipalities and so forth have. Sales tax, income tax are more volatile than toll revenue on our system. Your second factor is exposure to significant one-time outlays. So we have to consider, if we have a bad winter, how much of an impact is that on our annual operating budget. And third factor is whether or not the fund balances that we do have are committed to certain purposes or ends, and they aren't in this particular case. So we also reviewed some literature from the Civic Federation. The Civic Federation commented on GFOA's best practice of two months of operating reserves. They supported GFOA's best practice and supported a minimum reserve requirement equivalent to 2 months of operating expenses. As I mentioned, because the tollway does have a predictable revenue source, and because our revenue in total is so much, or is higher than our annual operating expenses, we fund both debt service and capital expenses, that it could be acceptable to have, I think, a lower level of reserve than 2 months. But 2 months is what GFOA and the Civic Federation have endorsed as appropriate for general government. We do have additional reserves for debt service. Our trust indenture provides for a requirement that we maintain a debt service reserve, which would accommodate one full year of debt service costs. And we have tried to maintain, in concert with discussions with AECOM, who's our consulting engineer, a minimum of about $50 million in our renewal and replacement account, which is used for capital repairs. So I think in summary, we do have some flexibility, obviously, to set this both legally and with respect to kind of the literature suggestion. But generally, I think the recommendation is a target of 2 months would seem to be inappropriate.
What's the dollar amount translate to? What's the additional money we'll need to get to 17%?
I think it's about $45 million at the current
So right now we're at 27%.
Right now, by the end of the year, we'll be at 27.
Yeah, each month we
currently we're putting in each month.
So basically, at the end of the year, will there be excess funds in different areas that we might be able to transfer into the reserves, or will we have to basically going forward do a line item change for the operating account.
We're hoping on the basis of the first quarter report that there will be some funds available at the end of the year, either through increased revenue or lower operating expenses.
Okay.
And that's, it could be an opportunity for the board to decide to move some of those funds into the operating reserve. Or we could proceed to build it into annual budgets as we go forward and try to build up to that target.
I'm for best practices and the GOA and the Civic Federation are recommending 2 months. I would prefer that we do that. I don't know how the other members feel.
So when the GFOA makes those recommendations, and it's always based on different types of government entities, if you're looking at a 2 month reserve and normal operating expenditures, that would, you would say about maybe $20 million a month, according to the budget, which is about $265 million.
Yeah.
So, but they're, when they look at those 2 months, they talk about 2 months of operating expenses, but using an unrestricted fund balance.
Right.
So when we're talking about unrestricted fund balance, does the unrestricted fund balance include more than just the operating reserve that you're talking about, such as accounts receivable, or is the accounts receivable in that operating reserve?
The amount that I'm referring to in our operating reserve is really a cash reserve.
So and do we have, what were our unrestricted fund balance?
And there aren't any and there aren't any commitments against that operating.
So would you say that with the unrestricted fund balance that's in the, and that would be more that we would have to be increasing the operating reserve?
Our unrestricted fund balance or unrestricted net assets on a GAAP basis are significantly higher than
that. We would meet more than 2 months worth,
yes,
of operating expenditures.
Yeah.
So we're well over the GFOA recommendation.
I think we're well over if you look at it on a GAAP basis.
So we're not really, so really we shouldn't just be using operating reserves as the benchmark for the 2 months of operating.
I think Civic Federation review looked at what GFOA recommended, and I think is really more designed to look at kind of available cash and fund balance as opposed to. But you're right, GFOA's analysis was on the basis of fund balance, unrestricted.
And what would you say our unrestricted fund balance would cover in expenditures?
I'm sorry, I'll have to give you that. It's well above.
I think well above probably a whole year's worth of expenditures.
It's yes.
So I really think that we have more than sufficient in our operating reserve, unless there's another reason why we need to be stockpiling cash in the operating reserve.
And I think, you know, the reason that amount is significantly higher than 2 months of operating expenses is because we do have these capital funds that we've set aside that are unrestricted. They can be used for operating. You know, we have several hundred million dollars that we've set aside currently for the Move Illinois program. So, while...
But if there was some emergency situation or dire situation where our revenues really didn't perform or we needed to dip into it, operations were allowed to do that.
Yes. But the impact of that is if you don't have the operating reserve, you could be impacting the capital program over the longer term. So I absolutely hear what you're saying, and I agree that with respect to the test that GFOA has provided, we clearly meet that, we clearly exceed that.
When we have projects that we, for instance, we budget a project for $50 million and it comes in at 40, and we budgeted the 50, where does that $10 million end up? Because I've seen it end up in some kind of reserve account.
Well,
per capita.
Of course, in that particular case, it's a budgetary difference. And what we would do in that case is to, is on a budgetary basis, transfer that budget authority to a reserve. We're not moving money around in that case. We're saying over 15 years, we expect to spend $12 billion. And with the $12 billion program comes some likelihood that we're going to miss the target on some of those estimated costs, or we're going to have change orders, or we're going to have some unexpected expenses over that 15 years. So,
but we've been fortunate enough where those costs have been coming in less than what we've been projecting, and I remember about a couple, two, 3 months ago, wasn't that reserve up to like about $65, $70 million?
Yes, on a $12 billion program.
So we have a $70 million reserve there in case for capital.
We have a seven.
Other than the operating reserve that's already at 17 or 27.
Again, I want to be clear that the $70 million isn't $70 million of cash sitting there ready to be used. What it is, is an indication that if the program went precisely as we expected for the rest of the 15 years, mm-hmm. that by the end we wouldn't have spent $12 billion, we would have spent $11,930,000.
What's your recommendation? What are your thoughts?
I think that, given the amount of capital funds that we have, given the stability of the tollways revenue, given the relatively lack of volatility in the operating expenses, that we have an adequate reserve, but that the conservative aspect of me says there's certainly, at the board's preference, there's certainly no harm I see in attempting to increase that reserve to $40 or $45 million to protect against potential declines in revenue or unexpected costs during winter. It probably provides more of a protection for the capital program, really, than it does for our operating.
Our operations will take precedence.
Our operations have the first lien, so they're going to be funded.
So this is a discussion of this. There's no action needed. It's just, or do we need action?
Or direction. We can also kind of adopt a wait-and-see approach, and when we come time to do the budgeting for next year and see how much, you know, what kind of balances we have at the end of this year. We can also, come back and make some decisions, work together to make some decisions about how to pursue this. Clearly I don't think anybody is representing that we don't feel, comfortable with the position that we're in today, but there are some best practices. This was something that was on the work, plan for the finance committee, and there are, best practices out there that would say that maybe we should think about increasing some of the reserves if we were extra cautious, but I don't know, have we ever dipped into an operating reserve?
We did. We had a situation where there was a mid-year increase in the budget several years ago, and in order to fund that without impacting the capital program, we drew on the reserve and drew it down from 25 down to 17 million.
So it sounds like, we were just thinking that this is a discussion today, but maybe next time we'll probably have a budget in front of us or fund balances in front of us that we'll also be instructed in making some of the decisions.
Yeah, I would be more comfortable just to see what the how much of the unrestricted fund balance we have for normal operating expenditures. Just moving forward, just when we're looking at it, if there's any other potential toll increases or whatever that we're not moving a lot of money into the operating reserve and using that as a reason of why we need to increase other costs or other expenditures and because we're trying to meet an operating reserve when we have more than enough in the unrestricted fund balance to operate our operating budget of $265 million a year. So I'd like to have a better understanding of those expenditures and what the unrestricted fund balance is, besides just the operating reserve.
I think, just to add to that point, that is the very purpose, I think, of the trust indenture provision, that the reserve not exceed 30%. The bondholders want to ensure that there isn't some process by which the tollway is stockpiling money in a reserve in advance of their needs. So, there is a limit. There is a limit to currently built into our into our indenture that we could never exceed 30% of the operating budget.
Thanks, Mike. Any additional items?
In a moment, we have a couple of items that were posted on the agenda, but we didn't get the procurements were still in process, and we didn't get all the details of the selection process for financial advisors and bond counsel. As you know, we're trying to refresh the pools for financial advisors, bond counsel, and ultimately underwriters for, you know, any bond issues that we may do as part of the Move Illinois program. We do anticipate that for both the financial advisors and bond counsel, I think we will hope that both of those are ready for the full board meeting, and we can maybe have a discussion at full board just to keep those on track. The procurement process has taken, as they all seem to, a little bit longer than we have anticipated. I don't know if David or Mike, if you have anything else to add. We did want to, you know, send out information at the last minute and expect the committee to act, because obviously we want to give you plenty of time to review and, you know, for people to understand if they need to recuse themselves from a decision or whatever the case may be. So we'll get that out. Please be watching for that detail. If there's anything else. Great.
Thank you. Finance. Approval to write off unpaid miscellaneous receivables, the amount of $451,000.
Thank you. Finance does have two items. The first item, the second item, as Christy mentioned, would be deferred. The first item is approval to write off unpaid miscellaneous receivables in the amount of $451,078.22. Most of these accounts have been worked by collection agencies. All have been fully reserved in prior years. So write-off will not impact the bottom line in the financial statements. The board approval, if the board were to approve these write-offs, the Illinois Attorney General must approve write-off of accounts in excess of $1,000. So it's kind of a two-step process. Of the amounts deemed uncollectible, 79% is for one old commercial post-pay account for which the debt was discharged in bankruptcy in 2007. I think we did receive, the debt was originally about $550,000, and we did receive partial payment, and I think the outstanding amount is about $357,000, if I remember correctly. Other smaller post-pay accounts, property damage judgments, health truck payments, VES receivables or violation receivables under $25, which we're requesting write-off before going through the collection process. The process of pursuing $25 through collection agencies is expensive. And a state police receivable that can't be paid due to the fact their appropriation expired back in 2008 for this receivable. So finance recommends approval of these write-offs and asks that this item be placed on the board's consent agenda.
For the JDC logistics, we did file a claim, and there was a payout, right?
Actually, I think we received a payout outside of the bankruptcy proceedings, and in fact, part of the bankruptcy proceedings was an attempt to claw back that payment, and we were successful in defending that payment. So.
We do not have commercial post-pay accounts anymore, so this is kind of a remnant from the past.
Are these write-offs, basically, is this on an annual basis? Is this within what we've had in the last few years, or is this?
They range anywhere from about $100,000 to as much as $600,000, I think, and maybe right there, $550,000.
Although we would say this is on the high side, but largely because we have this very large logistics company that basically owed us money for their tolls that declared bankruptcy. So
that's right. This is a higher amount for miscellaneous write-offs because of that bankruptcy.
Questions, concerns. The Attorney General's office then David, it comes to you for review and approval?
Yeah, after the board does its work here, Michael will pass it down to our office, and then we'll come back. We'll expect approval, but we'll take it up the chain.
Okay. Any questions? We can some action on that for approval.
Yeah, I think there's a vote, right?
Wait, your motion to approve to write off unpaid miscellaneous receivables in the amount of $451,078.22. Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Moves to the full board. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
No action needed on this financial advisory. That's tabled to the full board, correct?
That's right.
We don't need to take any action on that? Okay.
We don't. I don't know if there's any interest in, we can just wait to discuss everything with the full board.
That's fine.
Yeah. I just have a quick question. When we, at the beginning of our terms, we extended the financial advisors for a year, didn't we, or the group of financial advisors that we'd be using?
We extended them for 3 months.
Oh, it's only 3 months? Okay. So now we've put on another RFP for new financial advisors. Is that what hasn't come back yet?
We've just received and just done, I think, the selection. And just last night at, I think, 5 or 5:30, got the information, the detail about kind of how that shaped up. So we do have that available in front of us today, and we'd be happy, I think, to discuss it. But we didn't expect that this committee would take any action on it because I didn't want it to go out, the detail to go out at 5:30 last night, and for people to have to scramble to figure out if they, you know, I wanted everybody to have an appropriate opportunity to review it before we expected the board to take
The RFQ for financial advisors that we'd be using for another year, or just on this next bond deal?
No, this proposal was for financial advisory services for an initial term of 3 years.
Okay.
And with an opportunity to renew for an additional 2 years after that. And we're seeking not one, but a pool of advisors.
Okay. Thanks.
Sounds good.
So we'll make sure that, obviously, the financial advisor information is available, and we'll send that out to everyone. And when the bond council, similar pool of bond council is available, we can also send that out and have some discussion at next week's board if that's acceptable.
That's fine.
Okay. Was there an MBE requirement in the RFQ?
My understanding, no, there was not. There was not a goal.
Oh.
We went through the process of trying to establish a goal, determined that we couldn't in this particular case, but there will be, you know, there will be firms, we believe, there will
some,
be firms.
Some diversity in the pool itself.
Thank you.
Item number 7, Information Systems, award of contract to McGladrey, LLP.
Yeah. IT has one item for your consideration this morning. Our item is an emergency purchase to acquire services of a PCI SSC approved qualified security assessor, or QSA, to perform a PCI compliance assessment and to prepare the tollways ROC for a report on compliance prior to September 30, 2012. The tollway is now categorized as level 1 merchant and will require a QSA to confirm its compliance. To ensure meeting our deadline, the work associated with the service will start before the end of June. Not meeting the September deadline could result in a tollway not being able to accept credit card payments. Funds for remediation services are also included in this request. The amount of the request is $78,000 to McGladrey LLP.
And this was basically, we had lost an employee. This is a staffing change, and we needed to cover.
Unexpected resignation.
Any questions? Do I hear a motion to approve the award of contract for McGladrey?
So moved.
Second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 8, procurement. We've got items 1, 2, 3, 4. Four items, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, directors. The first item is an award of a tollway invitation for bid to purchase health fair screening services. This